all at Portland State University. There are sliding scale fees. So there's support for youth, students, and others who can't afford the full fee. Where do people find tickets in closing?
They can go to www.cookatonon.org, and it will connect them to Portland State University box office.
Okay, and how do you spell that?
KUKATONON.
And it'll also be posted on our website. Thanks so much for being here with us today, performers and directors with the Village. We look forward to the performance on Friday.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.
Well, folks, that ends the Old Mole today. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Bill Resnick signing off. Joe Clements, our engineer. Bye-bye, and have a good KBOO morning.
Monday at 10:15 a.m. on Locust Focus, Andrew Kimbrell of the Center for Food Safety on the dangers of genetically engineered food.
We are at peak herbicides. We don't have any really new ones. So we're going from Roundup, which is wide spectrum and not considered that harmful, to more harmful, more toxic herbicides, 2,4-D, and then dicamba. And that'll all be stacked together. So you'll have corn and soy that will be resistant to Roundup, 2,4-D, and dicamba, over 50% of our farmland. Imagine that toxic load. That is the nightmare future that these chemical companies have for us.
That's this Monday at 10:15 on Locust Focus on KBOO Portland.
Cascadia. Today is Monday, June 16th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. A lot coming up on the show today. This is the world is reaching a very critical mass moment in many, many areas, and just keeping one's head above water at this point is tough going. You'll tracing through the headlines. We're going to be speaking later in the program to Professor Stephen Zunis about a topic we discussed over a year ago, the fact that we better not piss off the Iranians too much, because one day we may need them as ally, our only allies, in an extremely volatile region. It seems right down the line, at every point, at every critical juncture at which the U.S. might have made a decision that would have a positive effect on the region, we have made the wrong decision every single time. Now, how is it possible for policymakers, people who we are accustomed to thinking of having some notion of what is going on, some idea of history in the region and geopolitics, first it seemed that they were doing it on purpose to create chaos and exploit oil reserves. And now it seems that we're beyond chaos into some kind of bizarre no man's land. And it's we've turned the entire region into a free fire zone. Nobody knows who's on what side any longer. We do know that we have an extremely radical, very poisonously violent group of people descending on Baghdad right now. When we thought it couldn't get much worse, so we pulled up tents and took off, and now look. Stevenson is on the line. Hang on there just for a moment as we cruise through just a very few headlines. After Prison is a new zine that's come out and a website project aimed at sharing the voices of former Earth and Animal Defense prisoners. The project hopes to help build an understanding of what life after prison can entail so that individuals and communities can help create healthier environments for prisoners to return home to. It also provides an opportunity for former and current prisoners to connect with the experiences of others. That's good news. And the U.S. Coast Guard moves to assert its federal authority over maritime issues in Washington, Alaska, and other states are now concerned by what it might mean for states' rights in preventing and preparing for oil spills. It's not a good thing here. And we know... We're already thinking about what to do in the event of an oil spill. It seems that the idea of bringing oil to terminals on the West Coast, many of the corporate interests behind that movement have already started to think about what happens when the worst happens. And the U.S. and the U.K. Are already preparing for joint airstrikes in Iraq. 100 U.S. Marines and U.S. Army personnel have arrived at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. And that happened just yesterday. Nouri al-Maliki is screaming from the rooftops at Mosul. Didn't fall. Oh, really? The prime minister said we will not allow anyone to divide the Iraqi people. Well, Nouri al-Maliki, as many people say, was handpicked out of a deck of cards, and we probably couldn't have picked a worse card. Stephen, good morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Well, here we are in... many talking heads. It looks like World War III, but it isn't. It really isn't. Trust us, it's not really World War III. It's just a very bad situation in the Middle East. And this is something we talked about a while back. And now it looks like Iran might be our only ally in the region. But what's going on in Iraq? Many people, yourself included, saw this coming. Can you put some of? Can you lay out some of the pieces and what the game board actually looks like, so we can try to make sense of this terrible mess?
It is ridiculous. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, yeah, like I say, many of us predicted there'd be just this kind of breakdown. Even Barack Obama, when he was a state senator in Illinois, when he spoke at an anti-war rally there in October 2002, said the U.S. invades Iraq, it will increase sectarianism, it will bring out the worst impulses in the region, and it will greatly strengthen Al-Qaeda and its allies. And again, this is exactly what happened. So it's incredibly ironic. You have people like John McCain and supporters of the war trying to blame Obama for what happened, you know. This group ISIS, sometimes known as ISIL, these guys are booted out of Al-Qaeda because Al-Qaeda considered them to be too extreme. I mean, you know, these guys are really bad news. But the problem is that the Maliki government has so alienated and so oppressed the Sunni minority, along with the more general kind of corruption and autocratic rule and that kind of thing, that much of the population are actually seeing the ISIS people as the lesser evil. And that's why they're gaining ground. Meanwhile, you have this Iraqi army, you know, which the United States has spent $25 billion, you know, since the withdrawal, trying to train and arm and whatever. But, you know, like we found out in South Vietnam, you can train and arm an army all you want, but if they don't think it's worth fighting and dying for a regime, they ain't going to win.
Right. So the ISIS crowd, they seem to be easily rolling over what passes for resistance. And the Iraqi army, as you pointed out, has certainly proved itself to be utterly hopeless. Why a group like ISIS has been in the news off and on for years now, emerging out of the chaos. Why didn't we see this coming? Why did not, if people like us could see it coming, many people have seen it coming, why didn't the State Department? Why we have the CIA reading people's reading Angela Merkel's emails. We have an amazing capacity, you know, for even for human, you know, spy versus spy type activities. Why didn't anyone see this coming?
Well, I think, I mean, a lot of us saw a more general thing like this coming, and which is one of the reasons we so vehemently opposed the invasion in the first place.
But we don't have the power to stop it. The people had the power to stop it.
Yeah, really. I mean, it just shows there's really an incompetence there. This idea that we can that the use of force, if we send in enough troops or send enough arms or pour in enough money, we can suppress the population. I mean, the Maliki government, because they say, oh, it was democratically elected, sort of, it's legit, ignores the fact that the coalition that's ruling in Baghdad are made up of these sectarian Shiite parties, most of which spent their exile years in Iran,
right.
They're very hardline and chauvinistic. And they're meeting these other hardline chauvinistic Sunnis. I mean, there's nothing. There wasn't that big a division between Sunnis and Shias before the U.S. invasion. Saddam, as brutal as he was a secular regime. But when the United States, there's intermarriage between Sunnis and Shias is not uncommon in urban areas. In the rural areas, there's a village with only one mosque. Sunnis and Shias worship together. The difference between Sunnis and Shias is actually less theologically than there is between Catholics and Protestants. But when the United States came in, we ended up essentially abolishing the two main bastions of secular nationalism in the country, namely the armed forces and the civil service. And they were replaced in the case of the civil service. The ministries became these fiefdoms of these various sectarian Shiite factions, and the new Iraqi army was made up of these sectarian Shiite militias, again, many of which, again, got their training from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And so the Sunnis, seeing what was going on, seeing their country sold out to their what they see as their historic enemies, the Western imperialists like Britain and the United States, and the Persians, launched a rebellion, and some of the more hardcore extremist al-Qaeda types ended up murdering innocent Shiites, and then that led the Shiites to send in death squads to kill Sunnis, and lo and behold, suddenly you did have a sectarian conflict where none existed before.
No one in this country had heard of Sunnis or Shiites, and there was early on there seemed to be confusion in the media exactly what we were talking about. Now we've got aircraft carriers and all kinds of armament steaming towards the region, and we've already proved to ourselves and the rest of the world time and again that all of this is senseless. Iran doesn't have to send anything steaming anywhere. They're right in the middle of it. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but can you give us an idea of what role Iran is playing at the moment?
Well, it's huge. In fact, one reason that the mm-hmm. offensive by the ISIS forces has stalled recently is that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is in there fighting with the Iraqi army along with some Shiite militias that are not part of the regular army. Now, the good news is it stopped this advance, by the by ISIS. The bad news is that it further makes it appear to the Sunni population to be a sectarian conflict. It'll further exacerbate tensions, and in the longer term, further end up getting greater support for ISIS. And then we have this initial irony is now there's open talk. Everybody from John Kerry to Lindsey Graham saying, oops, it looks like the United States is going to have to work with Iran now, which might be good in the long term, but on this particular issue, it's just going to make this mess even bigger, I think.
It's so unbelievable, and people worried about Syria. The Syrians must be saying, hey, what about us? We've got murderous death squad militia type people still running amok, and the rest of us are saying, no, wait a minute, this is, it couldn't possibly get any worse, and so whatever you problems you've got right now, join the club. Can you? Okay, let's see. We've got less than a minute left. Can you just wrap this up for us and play Syria?
Tracy Fingers, ISIS, of course, stands for the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria.
Yeah.
These guys are involved in the fighting there. In fact, the guys who are about to fight in Iraq are allied with the guys who are supporting in Syria. and the Iranians who are about to cooperate with Iraq are opposing us by supporting the regime in Iraq. I mean, in Syria. You know, so and this is where it gets really crazy. It's just sort of a series of tragedy of trying to impose military solutions on complex political problems, and just shows the folly and the tragedy that comes from U.S. military interventionism.
So, I don't know where. I mean, I'd like to think that we can see where it's going. It's going in an absolutely abysmally catastrophic direction. Following it, it's difficult to predict, and I'm not going to ask you to make any predictions. Do you have any sources that you could suggest to listeners? We like to give people somewhere to go to.
One Cole, a historian at the University of Michigan. He has a thing called Informed Comment, which can be found at onecole.org. JUANCOLE, one call. He's had a number of excellent analysis that's come out just in the past few days that I and others have been relying on. That's one of the first places I would go.
Thank you so much for that. We've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Zunis. He's a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco. He's a coordinator of the program in the Middle Eastern Studies and one of the country's leading scholars on the Middle East. Thanks again for that, Stephen. We're glad to have you back on the KBOO Airways. This has been Echo Cascadia for Monday, June 16th, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show. Thanks for that, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Evening with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday.